learning Koheles. We are in the first chapter. We are up to Pasuk Chet, or verse 8. So you'll see a bunch of staples on the top left corner because I keep adding more and more pages to this. Now, as we've been learning this this book, Ecclesiastes, it's very possible that a person may get the misperception that it's kind of depressing and it's not the most enjoyable text. And that's the reason why very, very few people learn this book, unfortunately. But that's the reality, is because on the surface, scratching on the surface, that's exactly what it looks like, that it's something which is very negative and depressing. And therefore people just, you know, like to be in a happy place and not want to study such a book. The reality is that this cannot be a depressing book, just based on one reason and one reason alone. We know that the time in which this is read, there's five Megillot, each of the five are read throughout the year. Namely, Megillas Esther is read on Purim. You have Megillat Rut, which is read during Shavuot. You have Shir HaShirim, the Song of Songs, which is read on Pesach. So those are your pilgrimage festivals. And then Tisha B'Av, on the commemorating the destruction of the temple, we read Eicha. This, over here, represents Sukkot. We read this on Sukkot. So the question is, what was done on Sukkot? What is one of the names of this holiday? Zman Simchatenu, the time of our joy, time of being happy. So does it make any sense that the time of our joy, we are going to try to get depressed? We're going to depress the masses by making you chant a book? And obviously when you read it, it's supposed to mean you understand it. So it's being read publicly on the holiday, which is called the day and the time of our happiness. Obviously, the misperception that this book, Ecclesiastes, represents something which is just depressing and negative is just because it's not being learned on a deep enough level. Hopefully we'll get to. Maybe we won't, and we'll just walk away thinking it's also depressing. Hopefully not. So we're going to hopefully walk away today with, again, more of an upbeat. There are so many different commentaries on this, but I purposely stay away from anything negative so that I don't have to worry about anyone feeling that there is, in fact, something negative about this book. On the same token, to try to give a real picture of what this Sefer is about. So here we are learning Pasuk Chet. Our goal is to get to Pasuk Yud Gimel, and then the following fifth and final week of this parak, we'll go through the last sentences. So let's go through these psukim together, and then we're going to go back through them again. Pasuk Chet, Kol Hadavarim Yigeim Lo Yuchal Ish Ladaber. So you have the English translation that I have for us on the first page of our packet. It's translated here, similar words. All words are weary. One becomes speechless. Lo tispa ayin liros, lo timali ozen milish nishmoa. That the eye is never satiated from seeing, nor the ear filled with from hearing. Pasuk tet, ma shehaya hu shehiye. Whatever has been, that's already, it is what will be. Uma shenase hu sheyaseh, and whatever has been done is what will be done. The ein kol chadash tachas hashamash. There's nothing new under the sun. All right, so there's, instead of just plowing through this, let's go through, starting off with the Mesudat Sion in our packet on for Pasuk Chet. So if we go flipping a few pages over here, I think they're all numbered, I hope they are. We start off with Mesudat Sion, which is on page, do I have it here? I do, for Pasuk Chet. Mesudas David, rather, the Mesudas David. Let's see. Mesudas David. It is on page 8? Yeah, page 8. Okay, good, I did have it. Lotisba ayin. So I underlined, I mean, you can spend the whole day on each pasuk, but I'm just touching upon some of the things. Lotisba ayin, as we said in pasuk chet, is that the eye is never satiated with seeing. And he gives a mashal, an example, a parable, miben adam tispa ma'od, that a person who wishes to be satiated and he eats to the point, adchi efshar, that's what that acronym is, lo echol od, you can no longer eat anymore. Like you go to a restaurant and you order so much, they say your eyes are, what's the expression, bigger than your stomach, right? So you eat and eat until the point is that you just can't eat anymore. Kolomer, that is to say, im ha'inyanim ho'ela yira be'enav, hine ha'ayin lo tispa mashira'a. Our eyes that we seek after so much that we desire, the reality is we don't have the ability to utilize all of that which we have. And this is what we talked about on week 2, that if a person accumulates masses and masses of wealth, the reality is it can only go so far. You know, a person who is wealthy, a person who is not so wealthy, you know, everyone is still going to be eating, so maybe I'll eat a little bit better. You know, I could, this past Sunday, Saturday night, I watched the Patriots. People in a jail cell, maybe on a smaller television, watch the same game. So the truth is, you know, the fact that I have to go crazy and spend so much time and effort on trying to accumulate, it doesn't really necessarily benefit, because there's only so much that I can enjoy. At a certain point, it becomes counterproductive. The more you eat, it's no longer enjoyable. And if you jump down to the next part of the Mesudas David, with regard to the ears, Chazir Achaz Mimashal, he gives another parable, Mikli Mule. I decided to bring this cup, not only because I'm tired, but also as this example. If you have a full cup, Ad She'ev Shar Latet Od Mat Betocho, so you have a cup of coffee and they decide to pour it, it's just going to overflow into this vessel. Kolomar, Im Ho'inyanim Ho'eli Yishma Be'aznav Lo Timali Ho'ozen. That as much as you want to hear and as much as you want to take for yourself, the reality is we are like this kli, like this vessel. There's only so much that we can hold, and thereafter it just pours all over the table and just makes a mess. And therefore, the point of what Shlomo HaMelech is saying over here is that all of your work that you're doing, at a certain point, it's not beneficial, and therefore, there's nothing wrong with working and working hard. However, there should be some levels of limits to them, because after all, at what point, at some point, you're not going to be able to benefit from them in the long run. We look at Rashi, which is page 7. Rashi has a different interpretation of this altogether. Rashi explains when it says, Kol hadavarim yigi'im, lotis ba'ayin. He says, and this we'll spend a moment on, not too much time, we're going to spend more time on Sukim, Tet, and Yud. Rashi says, Mutsav al mayitron. This is going back on the previous sentences, the previous words, namely found in the previous Sukim, which discusses what is the benefit thereof, which is Pasuk Gimel. Translated here is, what profit is there? What benefit is there? So this is a continuation of this theme. Imachlefu Asik Torah, if a person, instead of spirituality, they change and deviate from it, and they're instead engaged l'dabrit b'davarim b'talim, that they speak, instead of Torah, they speak things which are a waste of time, idle chatter. He says that's something which is not beneficial for an individual. So therefore, even though the translation on our page on Pasuk Chet, on the first page, is Kol HaDevarim Yigiyim, Kol Devarim doesn't necessarily mean things, it could also mean words, that sometimes our words that we use can be beneficial and helpful, not only to ourselves, but to mankind. And sometimes they're self-destructive. So that's another interpretation. Now, it means also pursuing things which are opposite that of Torah values. That doesn't mean a person can't enjoy life. But Rashi continues and says, "V'im b'maris ha'ayin Bol asek eno lo tisava. If the whole purpose of your being is so that you can satiate your eyes, that you should want to completely just accumulate more and more, you will never be satisfied. V'im b'shmias ozen ozno lo timali. If your whole purpose is so that you can, literally it says that your ears should be filled up, your ears will not be filled. Which means that if a person is only interested in trying to accumulate more and more, you'll never be satisfied with that which you have accumulated. As Chazal tell us, our sages say, if a person has 100, you want 200. And probably a more practical example is Howie Mandel for the show, what's the name of the show? Deal or No Deal? I'm not talking about... I usually say that to my students when they go to in the summer, because I have a lot of Sephardic students, so I ask them, Where are they going in the summer, Deal or No Deal? But when I'm talking about the show, you have people that already, you know, they walk in. There's absolutely no skill whatsoever in this game. It's just a bunch of random numbers that you pick. And people, you can win a million dollars, which, of course, no one in their right mind would because it's too much of a risk. But people will take more and more chances. And the fact is, it right on the board, it says you can walk away with $200,000. No deal, right? So that's the problem that we have, that a person gets, I guess, greedy. That you start thinking you can accumulate more. And even though you walked in there with nothing, all of a sudden you start thinking you should have it all, to the point that you'll never be satiated, you'll never be satisfied. Hopefully you'll be satisfied at some point, but that's the concern. And this is actually, this concept is echoed furthermore on the same page where Rashi was found underneath it on the commentary called the Mahari Turani that says, "L'tishma ayin liros," says, "She'im hoyilol adam." Kol zahav kesef shibolam. If you happen to have, which is impossible, all the silver and gold in the world, ein eino sevia. Your eye will not be happy with it. Shadayin mevakeh shalom v'liknos yoter, because you're still going to wish to work to acquire more. It says if you already have kol kesef zahav olam, you have all the gold and the silver in the world, you still want more. Which means even if you have everything. Well, of course, you can't have everything, but the point is, if you're lacking even the smallest amount, you're going to not be satisfied with that. Let's say you're a king, a powerful individual in an army, and you conquered many lands. What does that mean? That your ears won't be filled? You're still going to want to conquer more land. There's always more to conquer. There's always more to take, and therefore that's the problem of that many have. The most famous individual that had this attitude that the Maharit Turani brings about is Haman. And we learn in the Haman, the story of Purim, that he basically had everything you could imagine. He had wealth. He had success. He was the second in command, just behind King Ahasuerus. Yet there was some guy by the name of Mordechai that didn't bow down to him, and he said the most bizarre sentence: "V'chol zeh einenu shove li." All the things I have means nothing to me. And that's the reason that a person who is accumulated and has wealth, it's possible that you may have the perception, it doesn't have to be this way, but this is something you have to train yourself, that you may feel that I'm entitled to it. And therefore, the masses of wealth that I have, it's mine. And therefore, I'm entitled to this and more. And therefore, the fact that I'm lacking a small amount, it bothers me. On the other hand, the proper attitude of being the Samech B'Chalko is looking at whatever you have and saying, I'm not entitled to anything. So the fact that I have this little thing, I'm so happy. I'm so so very fortunate. And therefore, but this is the message that Shlomo, of all people, has the right to say. Shlomo was not a poor man. He was a very, very wealthy, affluent king. And therefore, for someone who's poor to say this, big deal. You're just saying it because you've never experienced, you've never tasted the taste of wealth and affluence. However, Shlomo HaMelech is telling, he said, listen, look at me. I'm telling you that if you're only interested in chasing after the buck, the reality is it has no end. And therefore, it may not necessarily be the greatest of goals that one should be trying to look after. So again, when we focus, so I'm trying to stay positive here, I'm not trying to be negative, but again, you have to look at this and understand that, for example, on Sukkot, which in addition to a time of happiness, is also the time of tremendous wealth. It's also called Chag Vasif, the time of our ingathering. And therefore, maybe precisely at the time in which we have accomplished so much, that we can let ourselves think, chasing after getting more wheat and barley or whatever in our storehouses and our silos, that is the ultimate level of simcha. And the answer is we have to read Koheles to ground us to understand that if you're pursuing wealth as a means of becoming happy, then you're going down the wrong road. That's not the way of achieving simcha. And therefore, that's maybe the ultimate level of why this Kohelet is being studied, so that it'll give us the proper perceptive of how to achieve simcha in our lives, which hopefully we'll get a glimpse to throughout the text. Question?
Not a question. Everything you're saying makes so much sense. If you have the ability and the time to sit and study like this, I think it's beautiful, but with that comes a lot of self-esteem to be able to say that what I have is enough. And that comes with time and wisdom. Some people have it when they're in their 20s, some people in their 50s.
And some people never.
I have a very, everyone thinks about their parents in a certain way, and we all have learned so much from them, My mother taught us when we were growing up about balance.
Yes.
Time to study, time to go out with your friends, to have a little good time. You can't just sit. She used to tell my brother, who was more of a, homebody. And she used to say to him, okay, go out already. Have fun. Go out with your friends.
Right.
So in life, you have to have balance.
That's right.
And this is all about balance.
That's right.
That's what it is. It's not negative. It's balance.
Thank you.
That's what I try to teach my children.
Excellent.
Also the fact that material things are not important.
But they are at some level.
At some level, but I always tell my children, if you break something accidentally, not well, it's material. It's gone. I don't care who's it. God forbid, if you're in a car accident, if you're okay, that's what it's all about.
Right.
And that's all part of this, that material things that you can replace, or even if you can't.
Right.
It's not important.
And that's absolutely correct. And I believe also what is being said by Rashi, as well as this commentary that we just saw, is the important, not that it's shunning and saying there's anything wrong with affluence, but you cannot let it control your life. You cannot allow it to control you. You are in you're the owner of the possessions. Do not let the possessions own you. And therefore, that's the difficulty, because it does state in Perkei Avot that the more nechasim, the more possessions you have, marba daigot, the more problems, more worries you have, and more headaches. Why are you laughing?
No, because I think the more you have, the more problems you have. I used to make, if you want to have a show, if you want to have like a limousine, then you need a chauffeur. Then
right.
You have to hire a chauffeur.
Right. Then
you worry about that as the economy.
That's right.
So I live in this, I really try to learn the message, but half the time you'll hear me complaining because I'm fixing my house, my big house, new roof, new windows, and all I do is get aggravated. And it's not simple. It's not simple. People say, oh, you live in such a van, but then you have to, this is how they walk into my house. I lived here.
I sit
on the couch, I look out the window, I wouldn't need to go to a therapist or anything, and I'm thinking, I wish I was like grounded in this, that I could appreciate, and I try to say God, and I change it to look, I have to thank God that I have such a nice
family. We're human.
It's a constant conflict.
Very good. So. Right. That's what we discussed in the first week. We brought down the idea of how Koheles was not even going to be canonized as part of Tanakh. However, the very end, it says a sentence in which sums everything up. And therefore, the whole message of what Shlomo is teaching us is that even someone as great as he, it didn't all come to him. It wasn't all easy. It was a process. And life is a process of going from one point to the next. He can't just jump up the ladder from jumping, skipping 20 rungs. It takes one step at a time, and that's the way that you're able to climb. Otherwise, you'll fall flat on your face.
And that's no matter how old you are, and I'm older than everybody here, you can't be at one position. You have to be moving somewhere. Otherwise, you become stagnant. And so there's always changes happening because you're changing as a person. As right. things in life happen to you, how you handle them, and right. how you go forward or backward sometimes
right.
is all part of this. And you never should be at a point where you sit back and say, okay, it's all over, I'm just going to sit. You always have to learn, you always have to be, you always have to be giving. Otherwise, you're not fulfilling what you're supposed to be doing in life.
Well said. Okay, let's now move on to the next two psukim, Pasuk Tet and Pasuk Yud. Pasuk Tet, as we read already, said that in Pasuk Yud, that everything that that is in this world has already been, right? And he concludes, he says that there's nothing new under the sun. Ein kol chadash tachas hashamash. There's nothing new. And you can say, what do you mean? There's constantly inventions. When it came to the days of Noah, he didn't have the World Wide Web. So what are you talking about that there are things that are not new? There are new things. Every moment things are happening, which people are creating new things. There's medications for illnesses. There's scientists discovering new things. What do you mean that when he says these words, Ein kol chadash tachas hashamash. What exactly does that mean? So, this is something which we've touched upon in the past, but the idea of when it says tachas hashamash, it doesn't necessarily mean the entire world, everything that we know of it. If we look in Rashi, Rashi again reminds us of this message, that it depends on where you are and what it means when it says in proximity of the Shemesh. B'chol, I'm on page nine. Ma shehayu hu shiyeh. B'chol ma shehu lamad b'davar shu chalifi ha-shemesh ein bo chidush. He says anything which is opposite of the sun, there is nothing new. Lo yira elamasha hayikvar shenivra mesheshes imei breishit. Everything that was created during the 6 days of creation, that is the only creation, and nothing else that we've ever seen since then is really anything new. So what exactly does that mean? So we're going to stop in the middle of that Rashi for a moment. So the key word, I believe, is in Pasuk Yud, the first two words. Yesh davar. Yesh, there is something. What exactly is this? What was the most unusual aspect in which many people who are atheists have difficult to wrap their head around is the concept called Yesh Ma'ayin. What does that mean? It's very hard for us to understand what this means in our limited capacity. It's almost impossible. It is impossible, I think. Yesh Ma'ayin means that the great thing that God did, which was unusual to any other human being, any other creation, is on the very beginning of creation, He created Yesh, something, Ma'ayin, from nothing. He created the world in which before the world there was absolutely nothing. It's hard to understand. Because when we think of nothing, we may think of a sky, but that's something. It's hard to really understand what is nothing. Because we are limited to our time and space. We're limited to that aspect. We're finite in time, and also we occupy space. God is beyond the concept of time. God is beyond the concept of space. And therefore, God is able to create something, the world, from absolutely nothing. That is something which no human being is ever able to do. Every creation that is ever made in this world is from something that already existed. And discoveries are exactly that. I discovered it. if you have archaeological diggings in the ground and you find the Dead Sea Scrolls or whatever you find, but they were there. Everything was already there. You found fossils, they were already there. And therefore, when he says that there is nothing new in the sun, in kol chadash tachas hashamesh, he really shows us our limitations in this world in comparison to the omnipotent God that we have. But the key is not just that God is the only one that can create things that do not exist, because we also have the capacity to tap into it as well. Because Pasuk Yud says Yesh Davar. Yesh Davar is translated here as what? Is there a thing? A thing is an object, something that is tangible, something that exists. Rashi points out that there is something that we can do to tap into something which is godlike, of creating Yesh Ma'ayin, something which was never there. And that is, he uses the word Torah, which you can also translate loosely as concepts, thoughts, and ideas. Because you can't create something which was not in existence, because it's already here. You can change it. You can build a house, but the wood was there. But when it comes to a concept in your mind, something which maybe no one ever thought of, this concept, this idea, that's something which is literally Yesh Ma'ayin, which is our ability of using our mind to be able to think, is one of the ways that we can act God-like of becoming Yesh Ma'ayin. And the way that Rashi uses, instead of saying the thinking and ideas, which of course is tremendously fulfilling, Rashi uses the example of Torah. So we go back to the second half of this Rashi. He says, "Avol ahoga b'Torah motzavot tamid chedushi ta'amin." A person who is engaged in Torah study constantly is able to produce new reasons for things. Ke'inyan shene'emar, as it says in Mishle, "Dodeha yerucha b'chol eis ma hadod hazeh kolzman she'atinuk memashmish bo motzavot ta'am avdi b'Torah kein." That the Torah is comparable to a child that nurses. That just as every time a child nurses, he tastes something new and he's nurtured, he receives nourishment from it, so too when it comes to Torah, it's the same thing. Therefore, this is what he's saying. When he says that there's nothing new under the sun, the under the sun means the physical world. But above the sun, if you can imagine, above the sun is the Shemayim, or the spiritual world, that we are able to tap in to things which are new. And therefore, by doing Torah, by doing mitzvot, that is a way that we are able to connect to God. And by connecting to God, we become godlike and we become eternal. We become as though we are actually eternal or godlike. So what exactly does that mean? So how do you see this really from these sentences? So it's interesting. And if you look at the words in this pasuk, in pasuk tet, ma shehaya, now I didn't figure this out myself, but ma shehaya, if you count the gematria, the numerical value of those two words, the shin, which is the first two words in pasuk tet, verse 9, the shin is 300, okay? Then you have a mem, which is the first letter, which is 40. And then you have a yud in there, which is 10. What are we up to now? Three, fifth, thank you. And then you have three hays, and a hay is 5, 5, and 5, which equals 365, which it's interesting, the 365 corresponds to the solar calendar, and this pasuk talks about tachas hashamash. So when we are able to, if we act as the 365, as the sun, then there's nothing new. If we act in the physical world, but there's something else which is 365, the mitzvot, lotase, the negative mitzvot. There's 365 negative commandments, things that we are not supposed to do. Don't murder, don't steal, whatever. So there's 365 of those, which is the same thing, which corresponds to the solar calendar, and there's no coincidence. It's because we can either be as the sun or under the sun, we can remain on the physical, or we can elevate ourselves beyond to that which is above the sun, to that which is the spiritual by the performance of mitzvot. That is our benefit, our purpose of this world, which is also, now I'm just going to go on a tangent on a tangent. That's the reason why we're called Adam. Adam comes from the source, Adama, the ground. If you pick up some dirt, it's worthless. It has no benefit. Just picking it up, you can't sell it. It has no meaning. It's dirt on the very base level. But the reality is, if you plant, if you're able to produce vegetation, vegetables, fruit, animals, human beings are able to be sustained by it, which means that the on the base level, if you do nothing, then you're like the dirt. But if you work and you toil, then you're able to produce and provide life to the entire world. That's what an Adam is. A behema is a makeup of two words. Behema means ba, bet-he, behema, so bet-he means ba, in it, ma is what it is. Ba, ma. An animal is, it is what it is, right? It is what it is, which means it does not have the ability to elevate itself or really to fall down. It is what it is. When God created it, He created it. And therefore, we are unable to elevate or mechadesh, make it new and special. Rather, it is what it is. But Adam has the ability to remain 365 like the sun, or tachas ha-shemesh, physical, or elevate ourselves above it. And then, so therefore, this is what the pasuk means. Masha haya, which means if a person adheres to the mitzvot, the 365 mitzvot, then hu shehiyeh, that which has been, which is the mitzvot, they will be shehiyeh in the future as well. You will be an eternal being by the performance of mitzvot. And I'll explain that a little bit better in a moment. Masha na'asa, and that which is done, which refers to the mitzvot asay, the 248 mitzvot asay, hu shehiyeh. That is something which also will be in the future. And therefore mitzvot, just like, as Rashi said, Torah, connect us to spirituality, to nitzchiyot, to eternality. And if I may, just one more idea over here of this concept of why, when it comes to the world, why does it happen to be that a tzaddik, or someone who's engaged in Torah and mitzvot, that you are already connected to the infinite, something which is limitless, is because you're connecting to that which is godlike. And God is nitzchias. The Torah also, Torah is called an Eitz Chaim. It's something which is always alive. And when it comes to the Jewish people, it's Ve'atem ha'dveikim ba'ashem elkechem chayim kolchem ayom. That if we are dovok, if we connect ourselves to God, to spirituality, then we are alive. And therefore, this is the message of, by learning Torah, that is the way that we're able to tap into the Yesh Ma'ayin. I just want to be able to see one more pasuk. I wanted to see the three more pasukim. I just want to see one more pasuk because I want to talk about Tu B'Shvat for 5 minutes. Ein zikaron l'rishon. We're on pasuk Yud Al. Ein zikaron l'rishonim. Sounds like a very negative pasuk, but that's not how I'm reading it. Ein zikaron l'rishonim. The gam la'achronim shiyu lo yelehem zikaron im shiyu la'achrona. There's no remembrance of them of former times, neither shall there be any remembrance of them of later times that are to come among those that shall come after. So one interpretation of this is, what do you mean? Things are not new. This is one of the interpretations Mari Tarani says. And he says, no, things are new. No, they're not new. It's just because you don't connect to the future, the past generations. So this sounds a little depressing, that there's no remembrance of the past. There's no zikaron. Which is very strange, because we do believe in the concept of remembering. Namely, for example, Yiskar. We remember. So I'd like to share with you just for the next 3 minutes, and that's when we'll stop, the idea connected to Tu B'Shvat. On Tu B'Shvat, there's a custom to eat the carob, a haruvim, boxer they're called in Yiddish, which I think the dentists got together to do that, to break our teeth. Anyway, it originates from a story in the Talmud from a person named Choni Hamagel, Choni the Circle Maker, which is a whole another story how he got that name. Basically, he drew a circle around himself and said, I'm not going to budge from this circle until, God, you give me rain. So he was given this name, Choni the Circle Maker. Nonetheless, there was a story that he was walking down the street and he noticed a guy planting a tree. It happened to be a carob tree. And he said, how long does it take for this tree to grow, because, you know, I'm a little hungry, maybe it'll take five minutes, 10 minutes, I'll stick around a day. He said, no, you don't understand. It will take 70 years. This is what the Talmud says. It takes 70 years. So Choni Hamago began to laugh. He said, what are you doing? You're planting a tree now for 70 years. You will not even be able to enjoy and benefit from these fruits. So what ends up happening? The Talmud says that he fell asleep. He fell asleep for the period of 70 years, which some say this is how the whole Rip Van Winkle came about. But Choni Hamago, the Talmud, you know, preceded him. Anyway, he woke up 70 years later and he saw this beautiful tree. And he went up to this guy, spitting image of him, and he said, oh, you're the guy that planted it? He goes, what are you talking about? My grandfather planted this tree. He goes, ah, now I realize that I slept for 70 years. That's obviously, that's how long it took for the tree to grow, 70 years. And he was walking around, and he went to the Beit Midrash, because that's what rabbis do, because we have nothing better to do with our lives. So he went to the Beit Midrash, and he heard people asking questions they couldn't figure out the answer. And one person said, if only we had a scholar like Choni Hamago in our generation to be able to answer our questions. And Choni said, hey, I'm the guy. And they're like, are you crazy? What are you talking about? Choni Hamago lived like a long time ago, and I don't remember when. He's not here anymore, and you're not him. And therefore he said the famous words, O Chavrusa O Masusa, either give me companionship or give me death. That's what he said. Because he felt alone, which is one of the worst feelings a person can have, therefore he said, just get rid of me. I can't handle it anymore. And so the question is, what was the whole message of this, and why do we eat this stuff on this particular day, on Tu B'Shvat, which some people now have celebrated in Israel as almost like Earth Day. And the reason is that when it comes to our lives, we can use our lives to benefit ourselves, to only focus on ourselves, or possibly to worry about the future, to care about others, to think about the future. Choni Hamago, his punishment was for him to go through the process of having to understand that he made this mistake. That he originally looked at this guy planting the tree, and he said, why on earth are you doing something if you can't benefit from it? Why would you do such a thing? And therefore, he was punished in order for him to be able to understand that the purpose of this world is not just for your own growth, it's also to think about others, that they should benefit from this world as well, so that there should be a world after we are no longer here that others can benefit from as well. And therefore, this is perhaps the message of why Tu B'Shvat became this particular fruit, which represents 70 years, which means I'm planting it, but I'm not doing it for me. I'm doing it for the next generation, a generation even after that, because I'm sensitive and thinking about other than myself. That's the message of Tu B'Shvat. And this is also possibly the message over here of this pasuk. Because the pasuk in Yud Aleph, the key word is that it says there's no zikaron. Im shiyu lachrona. Im means with. With is combining things together. And therefore he's saying that if we only think for ourselves, and if we're only trying to accumulate wealth for ourselves, and trying to enjoy the world just for ourselves, not think of anyone else, then there will not be a zikaron for you. And that's not a punishment, that's a reality. That if you are only focused on yourself, then obviously the next generation is not going to have any ties to you, because you never showed any connection or tie to them. And therefore, it must be im. You must be with them. And if you are with them, then the next generation will remember you, which is the purpose of Yizkor, is to remember the previous generation, the things that they did, not necessarily for me, but the things that they did in general, the righteous acts that they performed, and therefore to be able to connect to that person, to have an im relationship. And in conclusion, it's interesting that the exact same word, just different vowels, is am. An am is a nation. Because a nation isn't, I'm thinking for myself and you're thinking for yourself. We have to work collectively, we have to work together. And if a person is able to do so, not only are you able to create a nation, but you're also able to ensure the future of the world, and that there will be a zikaron, a remembrance for all future generations.